Centurion of the Watch, a radio drama for Easter by David Piper.
They say that in the face of death, man thinks of his gods, and your last night on Earth gives plenty of time for thought. I hate it. The predictable futility as the night drags on. The prisoners always start with a false bravado. As they say, there's nothing you can do to us now. But it passes. As the night chill seeps through the cells and the clamour of the city fades, and one by one, they realise their fate is sealed. Time's up. Over. I try to duck out of guard duty for the condemned when I can, but every centurion has to do it eventually. Pilot thinks it hardens us up, stops us getting too friendly with the locals, and then with us. Watching us march the prisoners through Jerusalem, out to Golgotha, each stumbling through the dust under their own cross. Well, let's just say no one's going to invite you in for a cup of wine after that. But this time, I drew the short straw, guard duty over the Passover. Lydia, the wife we met when my legion was campaigning in Macedonia, wanted me to complain to the CO. "You let them put on you, Dexter," she said. "They wouldn't dare do that to a full Roman citizen. Look at Augustus and Octavius. When did they ever have to cover the festival?" That's the trouble with the Passover. No one wants to work it. It's just chaos. They comb through the jails, rushing from trial to sentence to punishment before the next Sabbath. Winning hearts and minds by respecting the locals' beliefs or something. But with so many dangerous criminals being marched back and forth, if you're on duty, you can basically kiss the week goodbye. "And you have to sleep under the same roof as those murderers? I'm scared for you, Dexter." Well, you try explaining to the wife that I don't like it either. But as a soldier of the Emperor, I'm officially without fear or feeling. So here I am, in the guards room at the city jail, watching the night die as those prisoners still awake call on their gods. And tomorrow, break of day, we'll be off. The final march. As the sun rises and the heat of the day starts to blow in from the Judean desert, I always try and lose myself in memory. I've never enjoyed the games in the amphitheatre or the sight of men being crucified. The CO says I'm weak, not cut out to be a real Roman. "You need to work on yourself, Centurion," he sneers when I look away from yet another brutality. "You Egyptian recruits are all the same, no spirit. Jerusalem's full of the Emperor's enemies. We're here for shock and awe. You'll never be useful unless you can look death in the face and laugh." So I look those condemned to die in the face, but my mind wanders. Memory. It was just a week ago, my last leave. Lydia and I took a trip out into the countryside. Bethany, on the way to the Dead Sea. Leave. Those blessed few days out of barracks. The chance to be together, spend our days however we please. "We'll do this every day soon," Lydia said. "When you retire and the Legion gives you that farm in Philippi. You'll plant a few fields, just enough to live off, and I'll help my father with his cloth business." Lydia's dad deals in purple cloth all over that part of Macedonia. Their hometown of Thyatira is just next door to Philippi. One of those ex-serviceman retirement cities we all dream of getting into when our time is up. It was a proper summer's day, the blue sky almost painful in its intensity. Families resting from the heat under the olive trees. Children and goats running free along the dusty streets. You could hear the funeral procession from a mile off. Somehow, freeing in its normality. A decent way to go, compared to the executions and fights to the death of Rome. "We should go up and watch," Lydia had said. "Pay our respects. It'd be rude to just walk on by as if we didn't care." That's my wife, always eager to fit in wherever we're posted. "And anyway, we're out of water and they're bound to show hospitality to the stranger," I joked, voicing the practicality I knew she'd been thinking. I also knew the look she threw me wasn't really meant. By the time we'd walked up the hill to the local tombs, the atmosphere had changed, transformed. The wailing had stopped, cut off with a cry of joy. A dozen women in sackcloth were dancing around as if the spirit of their King David was upon them. It's odd seeing ash-covered mourning faces grinning from ear to ear. All we could hear were the words, "He's alive!" repeated over and over again. I stopped a youngster pelting down to the village as fast as his legs could fly. "It's that Jesus, that prophet from Galilee," he said, straining to be free from my hand and off to tell the world. "Knows the family, came to see the body. One called Lazarus, come out!" And he did. Lazarus lives. And the lad was off. We didn't stop to pay our respects or ask for water in the end. Their joy was so great we wouldn't have been noticed. The whole crowd cheering and Jesus and Lazarus lifted on their shoulders like returning conquerors. But that was our last day of normal life together, Lydia and I, before this. Standing by while the soldiers mark off those sentenced to die. And that same Jesus, who I saw in Bethany, is on the list.
Some see a teacher standing on a hill, speaking words of wisdom. Some see a healer reaching out his hand to give sight to a blind man. Some see a dreamer wasting his life on what can never be. Some see a fool dying for his dream.
Breath, I walking from an empty grave.
It's a long walk from the city jail out to Golgotha, the place of the skull, as it's known, made longer by the processional route through the city. Got to make sure the locals see justice being done, or where's the deterrent? At least that's the theory. And they make them carry their own crosses. It's hot enough for us by the end, in full dress uniform and marching the slow march. No wonder they struggle. I always try and focus on the past or the future, not the struggling men next to me. I know they're criminals. Murderers, traitors, thieves. But there's still people underneath. That's why you'll never get on in the Legion, Dexter, my wife Lydia often tells me, worried by my worry. Do your term and get out. Retire. We can live on your pension and my family's business. Well, I used to be ambitious. Get transferred to the real legions. Maybe even a posting to Rome. Win full citizenship for my family. But birth tells against you. Centurion in the auxiliaries is as much as an Egyptian can hope for. But today, I can't keep my mind off that one condemned man. Jesus of Galilee. Carpenter turned prophet, they say. I asked Octavius about him last night. He's been with the Jerusalem garrison for years. Lazarus? Yeah, heard about that. There's all sorts of stories going round, giving the blind their sight with a word, producing food from thin air, even healing leprosy with a touch. And his all folk are well known. Not chances on the make. There was one old man being paralysed since a kid. I could see why the temple leaders had been keen to get rid of him. There they were with all their learning, and this carpenter performing wonders. But what really got their goat was what he said. Octavius had grinned as he remembered. But then he'd been part of the guard that saw Jesus chasing the wealthy merchants out of the temple court, throwing their false measures and bent scales after them. They couldn't fault him, you know. He knew their holy writings backwards, didn't deviate from them, and made them out, particularly the Pharisees, to be the ones leading folk astray. It was almost like he knew all the people who'd written their holy books personally. And here we were, the man who'd come from nowhere, well, Galilee, which is even less than nowhere, set Jerusalem abuzz. Wasn't he the one the crowds had cheered through the streets just days ago? And come to this. Just one more statistic. One more name on a list. One more scarred, scorched back carrying its own cross up to the hill of execution. I try not to think of the prisoners next to me as we march and they stumble on. But this time it's different. I can't help thinking. This Jesus, why does he deserve to die?
If I was Jesus, I'd have some real long hair, a robe and some sandals is what I'd wear. I'd be the guy at the party turning water to wine. Yeah, me and my disciples, we'd have a real good time. Jesus, I'd have some friends that were poor. I'd run around with the wrong crowd, but man, I'd never be bored. Then I'd heal me a blind man, get myself crucified by politicians and preachers who got something to hide. Jesus, If I was Jesus, if I was Jesus, I'd come back from the dead, and I'd walk on some water just to mess with your head. I'd know your dark little secrets, I'd look you right in the face, and I'd tell you I love you with amazing grace. Jesus, oh, yeah, if I was Jesus,
our work's mostly done now. All the condemned are on their crosses. The crowd's thinned out as folk head home or to work. Crucifixion can take a long time sometimes. It's really no job for frontline troops. So the men dice while the officers turn a blind eye. For the locals still watching, I suppose it's entertainment. Some of them were part of the mob that cheered Jesus on when he entered Jerusalem just days ago. Octavius was up here earlier to see about the graves and pointed it out. He recognised at least half a dozen who'd been seen ripping palm fronds from private gardens and generally causing mayhem. It seemed like the whole city went mad, he laughed. All the old folk were chanting the old legends about their king who was to come. The kids were running around underfoot. Absolute pandemonium. And then this travel-stained ex-carpenter rides in on a donkey, followed by a crowd of fishermen. I don't know what they were expecting, but he certainly didn't look like a mighty warrior come to save them. But the people had been satisfied. They knew the stories, the miracles this man was said to have done. And that was enough for them. But how they can turn round and call for his death now? They disgust me. Typical mob behaviour. Octavius shook his fist at the depleted crowd and headed back to the barracks. A soldier's just escorted a civilian to the foot of Jesus' cross. They're putting the sign up, detailing his crimes. Looks like there could be trouble. The word is, Pilate's insisted on calling him King of the Jews. The temple leader won't like that. The sign on Jesus' cross, King of the Jews, is proving a nine-day wonder. Word must have spread amongst all the gawkers and layabouts in Jerusalem. He's not our king. What do we want with him? Look where all his words have got him now. Talk about kicking a man when he's down. Our own man joined in, mocking, telling him to save himself if he was really a king. Even some of the criminals being crucified nearby started joining in. But I've been thinking, what if Pilate's right? One of the condemned, a common robber, crucified next to Jesus, has just died. But he seemed to pass away in peace, despite how impossible that sounds. It was uncanny. In the midst of the abuse and catcalls, this dying wretch snapped his head up and started giving the other criminals a piece of his mind. He seemed to suddenly fill with energy and, strange to say, authority. "Don't you fear God!" he shouted. That in itself silenced the crowd for a while. Crucifixion victims struggled to breathe, let alone have any breath left over to talk in anything above a whisper. "We're punished for crimes we committed. We deserve death. And in a few more minutes, we'll face God and his judgment as well. But this man, this Jesus, has done nothing wrong." I looked up at the face of this uneducated robber, this creature I'd normally despise. And his eyes spoke volumes. He knew what he was saying. He didn't just believe, he knew. It was as if the gods were speaking through him, as if the creator of his body and soul was revealing the meaning of existence to him as he hung there. "Jesus," he struggled to turn his head towards him, "remember me after this, when you stand before God and take back your place in your kingdom." Jesus was struggling for breath like the rest of them, but managed to promise he would, that he'd see him soon in paradise. And then the thief died, like that, but as peacefully as if he'd slipped away from this world in his sleep, surrounded by his loved ones, as if he knew exactly where he was going.
Well, I am a thief. Well, I am a murderer, walking up this lonely hill. And what have I done? No, I don't remember. And no one knows just how I feel. Well, and I know that my time is coming soon. Well, it's been so long, oh, such a long time, since I've lived with peace and rest. And now I am here in my destination. I guess things work for the best. Well, and I know that my time is coming soon. Well, who is this man? This man beside me, the day he called. Slowly fading, but I deserve what I'll receive. Jesus, when you are in your kingdom, could you please, please remember.
I've had plenty of time to think the past 3 hours. There was an eclipse, and for most of the time it was black as night up here on Golgotha. It shut the crowd up anyway, nothing to see in the darkness. I found it somehow comforting. You could almost forget there was anyone else around at times, except for the small nighttime noises. The sun's back now though, and Jesus looks about ready to go. My memories of the past few days have been falling into place, one after another. Lazarus brought out of the tomb in Bethany. The old cripple, not just walking, but dancing down the street. The official reports of lepers healed, fit once more for normal society. And above all, the look on that thief's face as he suddenly seemed to recognize Jesus. His peace as he passed away, as if it was just the blink of an eye between the cross and the afterlife. Between hanging next to this Jesus and seeing him again on the throne of heaven. I may not be a Jew or know much about the writings and prophecies, but I've seen enough. Pilate's sign on Jesus' cross is right. He is the King of the Jews. Surely this Jesus is the Son of God.
That was Centurion of the Watch, a radio drama for Easter by David Piper.